Life and the Universe with Lydia Bennett.
Men are lost, women are lost. We could actually just help one another. And I think that's where we start going wrong. Like it's us against them. When actually it's us against the devil. And men are not our enemies, and we are not trying to be like them. We are different from them, but we are all one in Christ.
If you ever get in a relationship, if you ever get married, like, they still won't be enough to point you to the Lord. It's ultimately your faith, realizing that actually, like, who's the Lord put around you? And if that's a painful conversation, then, like, praying and being like, Lord, can you put people around me? Can you put fiery women around me? Because, like, love the men, but the fiery women around me are the reason I'm running this hard.
Just in general, I think whether you're a Christian or not, then, like, there's gonna be equal parts effort, planning things and starting conversations and talking about difficult things. I think that it needs to be a two-way street. I don't think that it has to be the guy that makes the first move.
Welcome back to Life and the Universe. My name is Lydia Bennett, and this is the podcast where I am joined by Christian students from around the UK to chat the highs, the lows, the complex and the interesting and everything in between about following Jesus at university. It's so good to have you here for this episode. Today's conversation is all about godly femininity. What on earth does that mean? Well, keep listening to find out. I am joined by Marta, Hannah and Lily to chat about this. So welcome, guys. It's so good to have you on the podcast for this episode. Now, last week we did an episode all about godly masculinity, which was really interesting. But now it's time for the girls to share their perspective on what it means to be a godly woman. But I feel like that phrase, godly woman, is thrown around a lot in Christian circles. But what does it actually mean? We're going to be diving deep into this topic. But before we do that, let's get to know our students first. Marta, could you just kick us off for us? What do you study? Where do you study? What year? All those things.
So I study at Nottingham Trent University. Go Trent. I'm originally from Portugal, born and raised in Portugal, and I moved to the UK six years ago. Sorry. I do broadcast journalism. I'm in my third year, and along with my third year, I'm doing placement for my third year as well. So 1 week I'm at uni, aka doing my dissertation. The other week I'm at placement. So yeah, that's how my third year is going.
I'm Hannah. I was born in the UK, grew up in Malawi, with like parents that are kind of slightly international, so it's all a bit fun. But at the moment I live in the UK, which is cool. I study geography and anthropology, and which is like technically combined social science, but it's basically just me being indecisive and not wanting to study physical geography. So I've hacked the system and I'm in Durham.
Nice. And Lily, can you tell us everything that we need to know about you?
Yeah, I'm second year at the University of Edinburgh studying theology. And I'm originally from the United States, and now I've been living in Scotland for 2 years.
Okay, amazing. So just to kick us off, I want to take us back a few years. I want to take us all back to when we were growing up. First question, who were the women and the feminine figures that you looked up to when you were growing up? How was femininity modelled to you?
I think it kind of breaks down. So like, I think people like family members, like my aunt, like I feel like we all have like a love, if my aunts are listening, love you all, but I feel like everyone like has a favourite aunt. I don't know if that's just me, but my favourite aunt was like so cool. It's like a teacher, like teaches on a beach basically in New Zealand. Like she's just so cool. And I just remember being like, wow, you're sick. But then also like the missionary women, like Jackie Pullinger or like Amy Carmichael, like the kind of, I remember reading biographies of like Amy and Jackie and like the women that would go to like crazy places on their own and just be like, do crazy things for the Lord. I was always like, whoa. I think that like adventurous side of like being a woman, but also going to like some of the hardest and darkest places and like, and just seeing the power of God was really, really cool.
Yeah, I think my sister is 7 years older than me. And so she definitely was somebody that I looked up to, and my mom as well. I was very blessed in that both of these like role models in my life and my family were just so cool and so strong.
When I was younger, I think I noticed this now, but when I was younger, I didn't really understand like how my mom, I think she was only like the only kind of woman. There was like a friend of mine when I was younger. So I think my mom, shout out mom, she's going to be seeing this and reposting everywhere. she's the woman. Me and my mom are very close. So I think I'm very blessed to have a mom where I can, like, especially when I was younger, I could be very, speak about anything and watch any kind of movie with my mom, which like a lot of my friends thought was kind of crazy. Like, you would watch that with my mom? Yes, we would. Not anymore. But, like, we would watch a lot of all kinds of movies because we are very close. But I think this is kind of silly, but like when you said that question, the first person that came to my mind was like a fictional character. And like, and I really loved Kim Possible growing up. Like, I really, like, I think because I didn't have, again, these older women in my life, because I'm an older daughter as well. Growing up, I really loved Kim Possible. And I was just like, oh my gosh, Kim Possible is like the type of girl I want to be, you know. She goes to school well, she does well, she saves the world, cheerleader, you know, she has time for social life and work. I want to be just like her. And even when I rewatch Kim Possible, I was just like, this is so unrealistic, but this is so, like, motivational at the same time. Because I think she was just like that girl. She was just like, she knew who she was. She was doing all the kind of things. She was very confident as well.
That's so real. Like Lucy from Narnia. Like, I think fictional characters are so cool. Like, I remember being like the constant battle in my like insides between like, would I rather be Susan or Lucy? Like, I'm just like, there's advantages to both. And like, I'd love the healing potion, but like being an archer, I feel like would just be really cool. Like that whole like thing I think you have, like, I still have it when I watch it and I'm like, do I prefer, like, would I think like Peter or Edmund's cooler? Like, I'm like, and you, because you watch the first, anyway, there's just the whole like, I love how you can get so invested in it, but it's actually so true. Like, media is so influential, actually, now that I think about it.
Yeah, it's just like fictional characters, like, especially if you don't have many women or men like, in your life, they can really shape how you see. And I really think like a lot of the way I am, not anymore, but like, I think I grew up looking at these fictional characters and like getting a lot of stuff from them. Like, the reason that I can be so like delusional sometimes is because like I grew up watching like women being delusional about men, for example. So then I would look at them like, so you are the one to blame why I am the way I am. This makes so much sense. Like, for example, like Musa from Winx. I loved her growing up, but now I can look back like, you are the reason not only I love music, but why like I'm into like bad boys in the media, because like, you know, like, you made me the way I am.
Started at day one.
Like, day one, like, since I was like 6 years old, you made me the way I am, and I blame you. And, you know, I think it's good when you have this self-awareness and you can go back and see like how people in your life, especially fictional characters, kind of shaped the way you saw the world. Not anymore. Thank you, Jesus. But like, I can go back and I find it funny, like, oh, because when I was younger, these characters, they really shaped me, what it meant to be a woman or stuff like that.
Yeah, for sure. No, I'm glad you said that about like fictional characters, because I think I was gonna say, this is so classic and kind of embarrassing, but definitely Disney characters for sure. For me, like, I grew up, I literally was brought up on Disney and all these kind of female characters. And obviously there's like a lot of, over the years of Disney, there's been a lot of kind of shifting of like how women are kind of perceived and like what it looks like to be a woman, or like even what it looks like to be a protagonist in a story. So, but I know for me, like, definitely kind of grew up wanting to be, I think, the Little Mermaid for most of my childhood.
Yes, I wanted to be Jasmine when I loved Aladdin, because I looked at Jasmine like, oh, I want to be just like her. You know, I really love her as a character. I know she's a little bit sexualized in a way, like with her clothing, but still, like, I would look at her like, oh, I want to be so like you, like, you're so pretty, and like, you know, you ran away from home or something like that, you chase what you wanted, you know, you didn't see yourself as an award. Oh, I want to be confident. I think I liked how women were confident, and I wanted like to be confident as they were confident as well.
Yeah, my like obsession in primary school was Percy Jackson, and I wanted to be Annabeth from Percy Jackson because she was so confident and so cool, and she just could not care less. Well, at first she couldn't care less what Percy thought of her. Then she did. But
it's so funny, like, I asked the same question to the guys last week, and none of them said anyone fictional or anyone kind of like wives. They're all like, yeah, my mentors, you know, my dad, or you know, people that I had like,
because you said that, and I was like, oh my gosh, I wanted to go first, because like, no, they were talking about fictional, and then like Hannah and Lily, like, yeah, my mom, my aunt, and I was like, oh, first person, Kim Possible. First person that came to my mind. I was like, okay, I'm going to bring this. Nobody's going to judge me here, okay? But like, Kim Possible made me the woman I am today.
So real. And you know, I think it's so interesting, actually, like, even distinguishing between the people that are, like, conscious role models and the people that are, like, subconscious role models. Because, like, I don't know if you ever watch things like, I always used to boggle me how Disney animals would make me insecure. Like, how am I watching a film about a fish being like, I wish I was as attractive as this female fish from, like, a 2010 animation? Like, what? Do you know what I mean? There's no comparison, but, like somehow, I think that it depends what you define as a role model, but, like, it's definitely a subconscious influence. So, actually, yeah, Marta, I think it's a great point for me. Yeah. Maybe the boys just didn't deep it enough.
Yeah, no, that's super interesting that we've all talked about the fictional, because that, as you said, Hannah, like, so impactful, isn't it, on the way that we kind of have grown up and how we see women today, and like how even the unconscious kind of role models have an impact. But I want to talk a little bit about how does the femininity that the world advocates for differ from the femininity that we see in the Bible, the femininity that God has like created us for. What do you think of the distinctions there?
I was asking my housemates, so before this, I like asked my housemates, because they're all like incredible women. And like they were talking about like the differences between, which I didn't really clocked, but between like cultural, at least in the UK, what I see at uni is like the radical autonomy kind of feminism that's like, I can do whatever I want, therefore I will do whatever I want. And like, I can do anything a man can do and I can do it better and I can do it looking like attractive. Like, but then kind of maybe how that has led to like actually the sexualization or the intrinsic link of what like culture says that sexuality is intrinsically connected to femininity and therefore like exercise sexuality a certain way to therefore be like female or feminine in a certain way. But then, and one of my housemates has linked it to them being like, but then there's also like the, I don't know if you guys have like used like the, oh yeah, but I'm just a girl tagline, which I like catch myself
all
using
the time.
Quite a lot
all
of being
the
like,
time.
Oh, I don't want to go to my 5 o'clock. Like, I'm literally just a girl. Like, why am I writing a dissertation? And then being like, interesting, because they like coexist within culture.
Yeah, 100%. You were talking about this. The first thing that popped in my mind, I've been thinking about it so much recently, is the like, I'm just a girl, or like girl math, stuff like
that. Yeah.
About
love the girl math.
I say these things all the time, and I'm like, oh, like a girl thing. But then, like, when I really think about it, I'm like, okay, but why are all of these things like girl math, are things that like make sense to us because there is like some form of like of logic in it where things balance out, but it's not actual math. Like, it doesn't actually, it's not correct. And like, I'm just a girl, like, I don't want to do this hard thing, I'm just a girl, is all like, yeah, you're not doing the thing, just like wanting to sit back or doing it incorrectly. And that's like really harmful. Yeah. I think that it's really hard though, because at the same time there, for me, like when I say that, it feels like some form of almost camaraderie, like of like femininity, girlhood, that kind of stuff. Mm. But then I'm like, surely there are better things that can be camaraderie, girlhood, signals of like, I'm just a girl, and it's like something really cool.
I think cultural femininity, or like what people say it means to be like a woman, cultural femininity negates vulnerability, in the sense it's like you can be one or the two. Like, you can be weak and just a girl, or like that can't do math and that like isn't brave and isn't strong, or like whatever. Or you can be like, ah, and like do all these things, or try and fill a space. Like, whereas in reality, like I was thinking about it today, and I'm like, I actually like, I think that biblical, what the Bible outlines femininity to be, and what like the kind of culture as Christians, I think femininity to carry is walking in strength but in vulnerability, because vulnerability is so strong, like, and weakness isn't, like the Bible literally says it, like we can boast in our weakness. So why have we made it as a culture that being weak or seeming to be weak, whatever that means, is bad? Like, it's not, it's such a strength.
I think just quickly on that, I think in some ways this conversation and other conversations I've had, I've actually been really encouraged by the fact that that it feels like there's actually quite a lot of choice for what women want to be. I think I'm encouraged by that. I'm encouraged by the fact that if you want to be super strong, you want to be a, you know, boss girl, like you can, but also it feels like there's a lot more option maybe than, I don't know, maybe, I mean, I wasn't around 50 years ago, but it feels like there's more option for what a woman can look like. But I think that can actually, that choice almost can be quite debilitating, in the sense that you're given a lot of options and you kind of have to fit into a certain archetype. Like we talk about that so much, you know, like this is the epitome of or it feels like we're kind of bombarded with that, aren't we, in the media, of like what the epitome of a boss woman looks like, or like a trad wife or whatever. All these people, they're kind of always stereotypes of women, and that can feel quite overwhelming. Like, which one am I? Can I not just be both, or can I take different parts of them and like, or even, you know, thinking about like what comes naturally to you as well. Like, and actually I would probably say I'm more naturally a leader, for example. But like, can I be a leader and also be gentle? And I think you can.
Yeah, I think like, let me be complex. I think there's a big thing of, there's this tendency to like put people into a box of like, this is what stereotype you are, this is what you are, this is what you are. And yeah, like you said, like, can I be both? Can I at sometimes like be soft and gentle, and other times be really strong and opinionated, and I get to be both, and so let me be both. Yeah. I think that's something that we sometimes miss.
Yeah, and I think when you look in the Bible, like for example, Deborah, she was a leader, you know, and so people may think like, oh, she was very strong. She was like, yeah, she was crushing people. But actually, she has a whole poem while she talks to Israel as a mother. Like she's a leader, but she's herself like as a mother to them. So she's not like being like, oh my gosh, I'm a boss lady, you guys do what I tell you to, let me just she's a judge in a way that she's there to give counsel. And I think when we think about judges, we think they were like warriors and stuff, and some of them were. I'm not really sure if Deborah was a warrior in that sense, but she was there and like giving spiritual wisdom. She was there like guiding these people, but we never see her being like the boss ladies like today, like, oh yeah, you do what I do, like you're a man and I'm a woman and I'm above you, so like do what I tell you. No, she really sees Israel as like, oh, these are my children. And I think like you can be both. You can be a leader and you can be a mother, because we see in scripture women doing both. Like Deborah was both. She was a leader, she had responsibilities and stuff like that, and of course she had like a spiritual authority, but she also saw herself as a mother to Israel. And we've been told this lie that like, oh, you need to be one. And actually, no, actually I'm gonna be both, and if God designed me to be both, then I'm gonna be both. I'm gonna be a leader and a mother, because that's what Deborah was, and that's the perfect example of like, we can choose according to the will of God who we want to be.
I think it's really interesting, because I think actually even reading some of the passages around like the controversial ones or like the popular ones about femininity as a child, like as a girl growing up, like I didn't grow up in this country. So like most of our weekends would be like, or like the best weekends would be like going down waterfalls or like going on safari or like stuff like that. And like I had my like best friend was a guy until I was like 12. And I think what I saw in like, or I must have seen as a young girl, of the male-female dynamic. I remember I like subconsciously, I think, internalized the lie that I basically had to do anything a man could do and do it better to be respected. And so it was such a tomboy my whole life, was like hated dresses. Like we used to have to wear dresses to church on a Sunday, and it literally used to be the bane of my existence. Like I can vividly remember my mum putting me in some pink Clarks like shoes I probably think would be cool now, but at age like 5 and being outraged, like literally fuming. And I think seeing what like culture says, or like seeing maybe some of the way that like femininity being twisted, is really powerful actually, and how we then internalize what we think God expects of us. Because I think in what I'm hearing, even in like what you guys are saying, is that like I'm so struck by how I think being a woman is a design thing. Like God doesn't put expectations on our behavior necessarily as much as he's made us to reflect his image in the way that he made a man and female in his image. So I think it's a way that we image bear, as opposed to having to like fit a model of society. Cause I think that is oppressive. And I think honestly, even like talking to my friends today, or being like, oh, like I'm going on my friend's podcast. They're like, oh, what's it on? And I was like, oh, like it's a Christian podcast about femininity. A lot of my non-Christian friends, like, especially as a social science student, that's quite like almost a controversial thing to like talk about femininity, like, because in culture's context that's a big discussion. And I think, but even Liz, on what you're saying, like I was looking in 1 Peter 3 when it talks about like the whole marriage situation, and verse 4 is like, but let your adorning be the hidden person of the heart, with the imperishable beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which in God's sight is very precious. And I think that gentle quietness is what the expectation that I interpreted as a child was made me want to run, because I was like, I don't want to be that. I don't want to be that. I don't want to be that. No, I'm going to be like a boy. But that word, like, gentle has been on my like mind so much the last today and like yesterday. I'm reading it, and that word is used 4 times in scripture. It's one there. The other one is like, blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. And the other two are used to describe Jesus. Like, and I think when you put it in that context, one of them is Matthew 11:29, when it says, take my yoke upon you and learn from me, because I'm gentle and humble in heart, and you'll find rest for your souls. And being like, actually, in that context, like, what is it you're taking his yoke upon you? That's a leadership context. Like, Jesus is a leader in that dynamic. And okay, so you can lead in meekness. Like, it's not a submission thing in terms of meaning that you're not a leader. It's a thing of coming under the Lord's leadership to then lead with him, if you know what I mean. So if Jesus is a leader in his meekness. So I'm a bit of a blue, I don't know if you guys use Blue Letter Bible. If you don't, huge plug for Blue Letter Bible. It's basically an app and you can like go back and translate the original words from, but what it says on the word like gentle, or like it translates the word praus in Greek. Anyway, but it talks about how meekness towards is a disposition towards God, and it's a disposition of the spirit, which we accept his dealings basically as good. In the Old Testament, the meek are those who wholly rely on God rather than their own strength to defend against injustice, that he like basically delivers his elect. It's the opposite to self-assertiveness and self-interest, and stems from trust in God's goodness and control over the situation. They're not preoccupied with themselves, but it's the work of the spirit. And I was like, ah, so it's a disposition. Like, it's not even necessarily an action of being silent in a room. It's a disposition towards God of being like, okay, who am I trusting? Like, am I taking this space up because I want to assert myself? And I think that's why seeing culture's narrative of femininity of being like, you need to go and claim your space because it won't be given. And that's fundamentally a fear narrative. And like, women have been oppressed throughout history. Like, that's valid. I see that. And I can relate to that in some aspects. But I think actually that meekness piece is an invitation to claim space because God's given you space. Like, you belong on this earth. He's seen it's fit to put you here as a woman, as the time is this. It's humble to occupy the space you've been given, no more and no less. Like, it's not honoring to the Lord to take up less space than you have. From that piece, even going back to the Matthew 11:29 bit, where he says, like, Jesus, you'll take my yoke because you'll find rest for your souls. I found that so interesting, in being like, okay, am I someone that brings peace? Like, because that gentle, like, meek humbleness is something that he then says it brings, you'll find rest from that, like, under his leadership. And I'm like, oh, actually, as a woman, or as anyone, because I think that actually does apply to men as well, if we're all called to lead like Jesus leads in different ways. But am I someone that is peaceful and restful to be around? Because I think, like, you know, when you spend time with, like, I don't know if you have friends that are like really confident in a deep godly way in who they are, I find those people so restful to be around, because they're not seeking to gain anything from you. They're not like trying to make this image. That I think also, like, in culture's narrative, you know, when you're just in rooms that are competitive, and girls can be so competitive, and so, like, even if it's indirectly under the surface, like, you just need a look from someone and you, like, you, that says millions and millions of words as a girl, I think. But yeah, I think I wanted to add that because I think it's really interesting.
See, in this war, there is gender war that we have nowadays, women against men, and we see this like everywhere, social media everywhere. Like, one of the ways to break that down is actually if we as women start like helping men, because that's in the end, that's what we're meant for, like, to be helpers. And like, how, and if men have their own strengths and their own callings and we have our own callings, how much better would it be like if we work together, and as women, like, actually, let me help you, because men are lost, women are lost. And we know what we're lacking in both ways. So instead of like just being against one another, we could actually just help one another. And I think that's where we start going wrong. Like it's us against them, when actually it's us against the devil. And devil is just making confusion about everything. And men are not our enemies, and we are not trying to be like them. We are different from them, but we are all one in Christ. And as women, we want to help. And I want to help my male friends to be the best men they can ever be, you know, to understand women in the best way they can, so they can be a blessing, not just for the women in their lives, but also for the men God wants them to become.
Yeah, I have so many thoughts. One, you were talking about the word helper, and this is one of my favorite little bits of scripture, in that the word that is used in the Hebrew for helper is the word that is, yeah, used for God. It's a different word than what we think the word helper means in, like, contemporary language. It's not somebody who, like, is to the side that then is a helpful, like, you know, pops in where they're needed. It's like this idea of a help which you cannot live without. And I think that that's so important when we talk about that word. Yeah, so just when we were talking about language and different words used in the Bible, it reminded me, I'm reading this book right now, and it's called The Marys of the Bible, the original hashtag Me Too movement. It is an incredible book. The guy who wrote it, Boaz Johnson, is incredible. His PhD is in ancient Near Eastern languages. And so he speaks about a lot of like cultural things that we miss in the Bible, things that we just, you don't know what you don't know. And so there are lenses that we just entirely miss. One of the things that really struck me as I was reading this, because I was thinking about, yeah, women in the Bible and the different accounts of like Deborah and Jael and Tamar and Rahab and Esther. And Tamar is really interesting. And there's this little bit that Boaz talks about. Tamar is declared, but she was declared to be tzaddik, but it means a just person. And the only other person prior to this in Genesis that was named this is Abraham. When in Genesis 15:6, when Abraham believed the Lord and he was declared to be just. And so after Tamar, a fabulous story if you haven't read it, but this whole thing happens and Tamar essentially has to trick her father-in-law so that she doesn't die. And after this happens and it's revealed what she's done, Judah says, she is more just than I. And that's that word that is used. And I just think it's a really helpful framework when we're thinking about women in the Bible and what actually are they doing. And in this case, like, this is a woman who did what she had to do to survive. And this language that is used around her in the biblical text is only used then speaking about Abraham. And then it's used later in the Bible as well. But at this point, that was the only other time it had been used.
Like, we have Rahab, and I love, love Rahab, because she's mentioned in Hebrews 11. She's a hero of faith. Mm-hmm. Rahab, she was like a prostitute. She was a woman. She was a Gentile. She had everything to go wrong in her life, but she's mentioned forever in scripture. Not just in Hebrews, but I think even in James as well. She's mentioned because she's such an example. Like, and how cool is that? Like, you know, she had everything to go wrong. But all that, and again, all these women have in common was God and the desire for God. Mm-hmm. We have like Ruth and Naomi, again, amazing women that they don't do what traditional, like now we would do. Like, if these stories were now today, probably the narrative would be very different. And like, we have these women, they depend on God. They love God. They are very, again, they incorporate this gentleness, this vulnerability that we don't see nowadays. And this doesn't make them less women, you know, like they're still like powerful women. We have Lydia. She was still like a businesswoman, but she welcomed men into her house, you know, crazy stuff.
Now, this obviously wouldn't be a conversation about godly women without talking about godly men. Well, of course, we are going to talk a little bit about boys, because obviously the idea of femininity, comes into sharper focus when we've already spoken a bit about guys, but I want to talk about relationships and how we are similar or different to men, particularly when it comes to romantic relationships. So first of all, I want to start by talking about entering into the relationship kind of phase. Does a godly man have to ask a woman out?
I don't think so. Culture and all of these things is so complex, and I think that it's just as valid for a woman who admires a guy and who wants to like date them to make the first move. And then obviously, like, just in general, I think whether you're a Christian or not, then like there's got to be equal parts like effort when it comes to like planning things and starting conversations and talking about difficult things. I think that it needs to be a two-way street whether you're a Christian or not. But yeah, I don't think that it has to be the guy that makes the first move.
I think what I like I think I can agree, Lily. I think the thing that I appreciate in like intentionality is knowing that someone's been intentional enough that they want to ask. I think that's what I then receive and like really respect, is that someone's put themselves out, because it's a really vulnerable thing, right? And I think actually we're really harsh on guys a lot of the time. Like, and I actually don't think culture's narrative on it's very helpful either, because it's like, I think can be really quite harsh towards men that have like put themselves out or like whatever. And I think kindness towards our brothers, especially in church, where I feel like it can get quite complicated quite quickly if you're like, especially, I don't know what your guys' student churches are like, and I'm not necessarily like saying this is what's going down at my church, but I've observed, no hate, love my church. I've observed that it actually can be really tricky if you're in like close community. And I think the way we navigate that is really important, to honour people, because we're called to honour our brothers as we honour our sisters. Like, we're honouring people, that's not a gendered thing. But I think I appreciate when, if someone takes the intentionality to ask. Like, I think, yeah.
I agree.
Yeah, just, I think I'll probably disagree, but I think especially as Christians, I think it would depend a lot in your view as a Christian, because you're from more of a conservative Christian, then you would expect like the guy and it's to ask out. If you're like egalitarian Christian, then like, you know, or a complementary Christian, there's a lot of like theology behind this, to be honest. So it all depends in what kind of theology you believe and how you see, again, how you perceive men and women. Because I think every Christian would say like, yeah, men and women, they are both, they are equal in the eyes of God. Like, depending on the Christian, like conservative or like more liberal, they could say like, yeah, but they have different positions, authorities and stuff like that, which is not necessarily wrong. It's just like a different theology. So like, it all depends on stuff like that. But I think stuff that I've watched, you know, because I'm the dating YouTube watcher, you know, like I'll be there, like biblical dating YouTube. I've seen it all. You know, I have a lot of theory, read books, YouTube, no experience whatsoever, but a lot of theory. I'm that friend you come for advice. You know, I think it all depends if you see the man as a leader in a relationship, in a marriage in this case, not say relationship, like in a marriage. I think if you see, oh yeah, I think the man should be the leader of at the head of the marriage, which I agree in a way, then I'll be like, yeah, I would prefer like a guy to ask me out, because it shows like, in again, intentionality, but also shows like, oh yeah, like, you know, I think intentionality is very important for a man. But I think if you don't see men as the leader of the marriage, then it doesn't really matter, you know. And again, I think as women, to date or even just to like a guy, so hard, you know, because there's a lot of like unspoken rules about, like, at least for me, I'm an overthinker, but I think a guy asking you out, it shows a lot of intentionality and kind of eases the burden of a little bit of like, oh, I have to try to prove myself to you somehow.
Well, I was just going to say, I think actually this conversation is a bit bigger than, and I don't know, I don't think we'll rabbit hole it, so I'm just going to disclose, but for our listeners, I actually think it's different for, in asking someone out, I think actually there's a conversation then about like flirting or like, because I think you could basically, I don't know, I think a lot of the girls I know, and I know I'm really emotionally, I think, switched on. Like, I think you can basically set up, okay, actually, I'm not saying I could do this, but I think there's a long way between meeting someone and them asking you out sometimes. What do we think about flirting? Like, what do we think about all this kind of thing that like the unspoken things that then lead to that? Because I don't think it's necessarily always as simple. I mean, fair play if you walk up to someone in the street and be like, hey, can I have your number?
On this kind of, whilst we're talking about relationships and godly men, what would you actually look for in a godly man? I think it's a question that we need to ask. I asked the guys last week, and they asked me what would I look for in a godly man.
No.
People want to know what are you looking for in a godly man? What would you look for in someone who you were thinking of dating?
I think the biggest thing for me is like, do I feel like, because I think it's so hard when you're like thinking about dating, because you don't like know that person like deep enough to know like all of their characteristics and how well you mesh and that kind of stuff. But I think one of the biggest things is just like, can I envision myself like speaking to you about something that, like, about something involving God that feels really important to me? Like, do I feel like we could have a conversation where I bring up a big thought that I have about God and faith? And do I feel like that conversation would be a back and forth? Which I feel like, yeah, I
speak your truth, girl. Speak
pretty straightforward, but it's more difficult than it seems.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's good. That's because I think since I became a Christian, all the guys that I kind of had crushes on were guys that I like their spirituality. Like, I like their theology. Like, oh, I could definitely be having like hours of conversation about the Bible with you. I like the way they led spiritually. Like, you know, like simple, which is like, it's not superficial, but like, it's just simple. Like, oh, like if you can quote the Bible to me, then like you're on my list, you know, like. Lovely. If you know, like, cross references,
you are eligible. If you know John 3:16,
you're eligible. You know, cross references, amazing. If you can, like, show me Jesus in the Old Testament, like, yeah, Jesus is in here. I know, like, lovely, lovely. That's because I feel like for me, like, I'm a very emotional person. So, like, people ask me, like, oh, do you have a type, like, physically? And I was like, no. If you look at all the guys I've liked before, you see, like, they are not. Then do not look alike. But I think I'm very emotionally, like, spiritually kind of aware, I guess. And so, like, I think all the guys that I've liked before, and mostly what I look for is, like, okay, spiritually wise, how is this guy? You know, it's like, and you don't want to say, but, like, sometimes girls can be more spiritual mature than guys, you know, like, and we need to face it. Sometimes that happens. And I feel like in my church, especially, like, we have a lot of girls, and we have a lot of girls that are very strong for Jesus. They are very on fire. We have very few guys. And, like, most of the guys out there are very emotionally mature, but they're also, like, strong for Jesus as well. Like, it's kind of hard when you're a girl, and without even sounding prideful, but you are on fire for Jesus. You're, like, you have your theology stuff. True. You know, you're on fire. You're going, you know. And then you feel like, oh, a guy doesn't match that fire. And if, like, oh, he's a baby Christian still. And, like, oh, can this actually work? Like, I want to talk about revelation, you know.
Wow.
It's just like, you know, but like, I feel like, I think there's this misconception that the girls, like, they don't care about the Bible that much. But actually, the amount of women that are on fire for Jesus, you know, like, men, in a way, they need to step up a little bit. Yep. Because women are...
That's interesting that you say that, because that's exactly what I said last week with the guys. I was like, I know a lot of women who are really on fire for God, and finding someone to match that. And if for you, being led... in a relationship, in a marriage, is important, then maybe this is really critical, but like, I'm not seeing a lot of guys who would match a lot of my female contemporaries who are on fire. I don't see a lot of guys who would be able to lead them in their faith, you know. Which is really interesting.
I think actually, even on that, Lydia, like, I think we talk a lot as girls about male relationships. But I've personally at least experienced like the power of female friendship in faith, and being like, actually, you can have like soul sisters that run with you and that like convict you and call you higher. Like, you don't have to wait to be led by a guy or whatever that means in your mind to like get to somewhere in your faith. Like, I think community is so important. And it's whenever, like, if you ever get in a relationship, if you ever get married, like, they still won't be enough to point you to the Lord. It's ultimately your faith. And so I think there's that contention of realizing that actually, like, who's the Lord put around you? And if that's a painful conversation, then like praying and being like, Lord, can you put people around me? Can you put fiery women around me? Because like, love the men, but the fiery women around me are the reason I'm running this hard. Like, and it's like, and seeing the men in lead, like some of the men in like ministry leadership being like, okay, you practice faith in a way I don't, I want to be like you, but also like the girls around me that literally burn for Jesus. Anyway, but men of God, I think, I literally think it's integrity and humility. Like, I think humility to like pursue the Lord. Ultimately also, I want the Lord needs to be your favorite thing. If I'm ever your favorite thing, that we're gonna have issues. Do you know what I mean? And so I think there's which is obviously like but I think I think the humility to then lead well, because you can't be a good leader unless you're humble. Like, you can't separate them. But then I think then having a type is completely different,
especially that part of like surrounding yourself with girls. It's so important, because like, I've seen like girls, like they really raise your standards. Like, you know, having girlfriends, they raise your standards. So, and even like, I was talking to my best friend, and I was like, I feel like you're always critical when I like a guy. It's like, it's just because I know who you are and I know how fire you are. And you mean like, you need better and you need that. And you need people like that, you know. Again, it's not like that culture. And when you see in the media, you can see again in the media, women demonizing men and just being very critical of men. We're not talking about that. Yeah. We're just talking about when you have girlfriends, especially Christian girlfriends are the best, you know, around you, and you can hype yourself up in faith and you can talk about guys, but actually bring that like that Christian insight is so good. Like, you know, dating is already hard in the world. You need that Christian community, especially girly Christian community around you. And I know for me it was something that I craved so much. Like, I need a best friend, you know, who loves the Bible as much as I do. Because that way, even though, like, I really want to get married one day, like, have a boyfriend. Like, I think because I have my best friend with me and another amazing friends, I can live well. And, like, you know, I'm not looking for that, like, love and that deep conversations with a guy, even though it's still a requirement, but I have my friends around me, mm-hmm. and especially my girlfriends, that I can have those kind of conversations. And it makes you feel less lonely. I feel like a lot of women, they're just like very lonely, and like they don't have women around them, and they just jump to the first guy because he gives them attention. But if you have women around you that like make you not feel lonely, and you can talk about God and do your nails or whatever you want to do, it really helps you like wait on God for a good man to come, and helps you not to jump to the first guy you see, because your girls are going to be like, girl, you can do better in a way, like, this is not the man God has for you.
Ultimately, I think, as we even going back to the word easer, if God is our prototype for that, or our model, actually in all of the relationships we're in, he should be the model that defines what that looks like. And I just feel like even it's really important if you're a girl listening to this being like, am I not more than a helper? Like, because I think that was always my heart cry, even though that word's used to describe God, which probably then indicates my pride. But actually, like, firstly, that God isn't defined by the dynamic that he was in, if that makes sense. Like, he was that to Israel, but he existed long before Israel. Like, and I'm not saying you can do that theologically what you want. I'm not necessarily proposing a theology of that. But like, I think of understanding the importance that it all is based on identity, and identity you get from the Lord. And so I think in all of this discussion, we understand femininity based on how we understand the Lord. And obviously there's relationships that help define and like all of this kind of stuff. But fundamentally, someone said something to me once and was like, you understand, you see a counterfeit, you can spot a counterfeit, not by studying counterfeits, by studying the real thing. So you want to know the real thing so well that when you see a counterfeit, it stands out, not by looking at all these broken things. And I think it's really true for relationships and for femininity, of being like, actually, what does it look like to the Lord to be easy? Like, go get in the Word, go get in the Old Testament and be like, how did God love Israel? Because that in itself is a romance story. Like, Egypt, even like the Exodus is romance. Like, the Lord literally romances Israel. And I think I just so feel like the Lord is jealous for your attention. Like, even as you, like, whoever's listening, like, the Lord is jealous for your attention as a girl. Like, he wants to be your like first love. He wants to be the like the person that pursues you. Like, he's literally there's no greater love than laying down his life. No man is ever going to be able to love you as the Lord loves you. Like, I hate to break it to you, but your mog is not going to match Jesus. Mm-hmm. And we support the men, like, we love you guys, but also I think there's an expectation of that romance that actually we put on to men that it's not fair to. So I just really, like, the cry I think of my heart is like knowing what God says about you and like your value, because that contextualizes everything.
So now it's time for the Campus Conundrum. Every episode on Life and the Universe, I give our students a potential scenario that they might come across at university, and they have to respond with what they would do. So our conundrum this week is, you have started hanging out with some new people at uni and you're really enjoying the company, but you notice that they keep gossiping about people, including people that you know well. How do you respond to this?
Yeah, I've been in a position literally like this as soon as I started my third year. So like in these kind of conversations, I was like, okay, let me either stay silent or just move or just do my work. Or I'll just try to direct the conversation in any other way. Because, you know, people will know you're like, oh, she never gossip. But like, it's about like you, and you don't want to be there like listening to that. Listening to people like not talking very nice about others.
I find it really hard sometimes, especially if you know that what they're saying actually is coming from a place of hurt. Like, I think as an empath, wanting to validate their emotion and being like, I see that you're really hurt by that. Like, or because often it depends, I think, why they're gossiping, whether it's just like, gosh, like, do you know, like, blah, 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 which actually honestly is kind of boring anyway. But I think especially it's difficult when it's a legitimate pain. And I think there's a balance between like validating someone's hurt or like validating their emotion and then turning it into because I think also our culture, I don't know if you guys find this, but has love looks like agreeing in culture's eyes with everything someone does. And so you're either for someone or against someone, and you can't, in that situation, if you've got a friendship breakdown or whatever, you have to pick a side, which actually I don't think that's the definition of love. Like, I don't think that's what it is. So I think in that kind of context, the eyes that people come to the situations like that with often, I think, are, if you're not completely agreeing with me, you don't love me. And I think that's not the heart of it. Like, and I think we have then a way or a role as Christians, because if the Lord defines love to show how, like, I love you and I affirm you as a person, and like the person gossiping ultimately is still loved. Like they're a person like the rest of us. We've all fallen short. So, but I always think the other side of that is then like you're saying, Marta, like you're not responsible for their sin, but it's a situation that you can help steward. And so I think whether it's like, I think either bringing in, yeah, I think I like to either bring in actually like, oh, I don't think that, or like, do you think you could see that this way? Or if you can't actually, if you can't redeem the conversation, then leaving it. But it's really tough, man. I don't think there is like a one size fits all approach to it. I think it's a situation by situation kind of thing.
Yeah, I think it's tricky. I think as well, it depends on how big the group is and how close you are with the people. Like, if it's a pretty small group of some pretty close friends, I think there's a lot more space to be able to be like, oh, like, to like ask some questions about like what you're talking about, what they're experiencing, and like the things that happened that like potentially made them feel the way they're feeling. But within like a larger group, that's just, there's not the space or the like social dynamics to do that well. I think if I were in a situation where it was a big group of people, I would do my best to try and like gently direct the conversation elsewhere. Yeah, and try to kindly move it. But yeah, I think it's a hard one, and it depends on the personalities that are there. Like, that can make a huge difference.
Okay, I think he's just saying like, it can be felt like very tricky again, and can be like, oh, but like what are people going to think if I don't gossip or if I don't do that? But people really see that. In the end of the day, it's about us being Jesus' image bearers. And like, people really see when you don't gossip, and people really see when you try to honor everyone. And that really marks them, you know? Like, I don't know if people gossip about me, but like, I feel like, you know what, at least they're going to know like, yeah, Marta doesn't gossip. Or even if they find that very annoying, I'm like, yeah, you know, Marta like tries to not gossip. Maybe she thinks all about this crap. And maybe I do, you know. But the thing is, it's just like, it's about being a good representative of Christ and Jesus. And like, it might be awkward. It might be, oh, people are going to think I'm like weak or stuff like that. Or like too nice, you know. And there's no problem being too nice. It's just about like, it's about honoring Jesus. And even if it feels like, what people are going to think, like, they're probably going to think like, oh, that person is actually probably better than all of us because she didn't join in gossiping about this person. And she actually sees the best of us. And maybe they're going to even trust you more because like, oh, I trust that person because like when you're gossiping, she never says anything about that person. And I know like she's actually a genuinely nice person. And then maybe you have an opportunity, don't gossip because, you know, Jesus is the good of everyone and Jesus loves everyone. And, you know, gifts, everything can be open door to evangelize. But, you know, it's about giving that good testimony first and, like, being more like Jesus in our actions as well.
Yeah. And I'd quickly say on that as well, I think even taking a gossip, and maybe, again, this is my personality type, but taking the bigger context of gossip and being like, actually calling out, I find sometimes calling out the gold in people speaking can be really powerful. Or like taking time to like be like, okay, God, how do you see this person? Even if it's not the person they're speaking about, but actually if the gossip is coming from a fundamental place of hurt or insecurity, validating someone's identity actually I think can be really powerful in cutting off that communication. Because if someone's speaking to get affirmation or speaking to create a dynamic they feel comfortable in, trying to start a different conversation or like directing it, and I think that takes a little bit of conversational prowess. Yeah. Or I don't know what that word is, but kind of worried. Yeah. That I'm third year sometimes. I'm like, the amount of words I have to Google is still quite concerning. But prowess. But yeah, to validate that, so like take time to validate that person and encourage them, I think can be really, really powerful. So looking at kind of like coming in the opposite spirit and being like, okay, what does it look like to like not only just tap out, but actually to bring the presence of God in? Even actually sometimes if you sit there praying, like cover them in prayer while they're talking, or like do something, take a bathroom break. Like I think the Lord speaks to me in the toilet big time. So even if it's just standing in the cubicle, like it's actually God. So
yeah, that's good. It's about being peacemakers as well. you know, like the Bible, and I remember listening to this in the Bible Project, like, oh, we are called to be peacemakers and not peacekeepers.
I think you said, Hannah, about it's so hard, isn't it, when people are speaking about other people from a place of hurt, or even I find it hard when people are speaking actually from a place of truth, of actually someone has done something that's really hard or really horrible, and you're like, I feel like, you know, that is true, but then also not wanting to dishonor them, you know, in speaking about it, that is, it's really hard, and I think it takes a lot of subtlety, I think, to navigate that conversation. Yeah. Well, I think the thing that I've found is what I've tried to do is, I mean, we know as Christians, don't we, that our words have the power to kind of to build up, to bring life, or to kind of kill, kind of thing. And I think I've often found that when I'm caught in that situation or noticing it, then what I want to do, or what I feel like I'm convicted to do, is like just speak words of life into that situation and be like, actually, oh, I think they're actually really good at that. Or like, I mean, it's sometimes rebuking someone is not the right, it's not the right place, especially if it's coming from a place of hurt. But speaking words of truth, but not only words of truth, but of life as well, I think can be a really important way of being, of, as you say, Marta, of being Jesus in that space. But I think also sometimes, we have to navigate that well and have a lot of discernment and wisdom in doing that subtly. And you know, sometimes there is a space to be like, actually, I don't think that's true, or like, no, that I don't think you should be speaking like someone, but you know, you shouldn't be speaking like that about someone. But I think that takes sometimes quite a lot of boldness, and also we need to be careful about the situations and the timing and place of that as well.
No, I think what you're saying is really good about, like, actually we're not called to be people's judges. I think it's about like honoring people in what we're saying, but I think actually there's room to go away and be like individually asking Jesus how he would deal with situations like that.
Wow, what a conversation with Marta, Lily and Hannah, all about godly femininity. And that campus conundrum as well, that's such a tricky one. What do you do when you're surrounded by people who are enjoying gossip? Do we just leave? Do we engage with it? So, so tricky, but it was great to hear what the girls thought about that. Now, do come back next time on Life in the Universe. More interesting conversations on the way.
You've been listening to Life in the Universe with Lydia Bennett.